Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. The inspiring story of activist and poet Ian Manuel, who at the age of 14 was sentenced to life in prison. He survived 18 years in solitary confinement through his own determination and dedication to art until he was freed as part of an incredible crusade by the Equal Justice Initiative. The United States is the only country in the world that sentences 13 and 14-year-old offenders, mostly youth of color, to life in prison without parole. In 1991, Ian Manuel was sentenced to life for a non-homicide crime and a botched mugging attempt with some older boys. He shot a young white mother of two in the face. But as Brian Stevenson, attorney and executive director of the Equal Justice Initiative, has insisted, none of us should be judged by only the worst thing we have ever done in our lives. The new book, My Time Will Come, shows us the capacity of the human will to transcend adversity through determination and art. In Ian Manuel's case, through his dedication to writing poetry. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Ian to the Roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Joe.
A great pleasure to have you on the program. I'm curious as to at what point you decided you wanted to tell this story and to get it onto paper.
Well, that decision was made when I was still in solitary and I was surviving. I wanted to try to capture the improbability of my story and everything that I had went through when I was surviving. I mean, I started preparing for this, you know, in the midst of solitary. I started journaling and writing down things that was happening to me, as well as, you know, creating poetry and stuff, and even pictures of myself that was taken when I was in solitary confinement. I started saving because I knew, I felt like the public would be interested in knowing that once I was released.
It's just inconceivable to me, and I will just state the obvious here, that a 13-year-old, 14-year-old kid, and you're a kid, that can be, that you can be sentenced to life without parole. That is, so you commit this crime, and it is a horrible crime, but you will never see the light of day under the system that is put in place. Now, go ahead.
Let me put that in context, because it was a Florida law that's still on the books that says a child of any age that's indicted for a life or death felony shall be treated in every respect as if he were an adult, which means I could have been 8, 9, 10, or whatever, and I could have been sentenced to the rest of my life in prison. And that law is still on the books, and it's one of my things that I'm advocating against in the United States of America, to end this no age limit restriction for kids to be tried as adults.
So, it's going to sound in a minute like I'm arguing this case for you, but you are certainly more qualified to do it than I am. But it just, if we're going to call it a correctional system, then the idea would be that if you put someone, if they have done something wrong in society, that you are going to correct them in some way so that when they return to society, that they will be better people for it. So we have it all wrong in that sense.
Yeah, because there was no point that I was going to return to society. I was, you know, sentenced to be made an example of, like, this is what happens to children that utilize guns. And the thing about it is, I was condemned as if I was incorrigible, like I would never change, that I wouldn't grow, that I wouldn't evolve. And we're children. You know, when you're a child, you become different as you get older. You learn things and you learn to value life. And so to sentence me to the rest of my life without the possibility of parole as a child was something that the judge shouldn't have done, you know?
So at what point, when you're going through this, now you aren't sent, where were you initially sent? Were you put into an adult population or was it a juvenile facility?
I've never been to a juvenile facility after I was arrested for the crime that I was sentenced to life for. I was initially placed in solitary confinement on my first day in prison for 3 weeks based on my age and my size. I was so small they didn't have clothes to put on me. They had to find some cut and special clothing to put on me. And after that, I was placed in an adult population at Appalachian Correctional Institution in Sneed, Florida, Jackson County. And I was given all the responsibilities of an adult, but I was still a child. And I rebelled. I mean, the officers would yell at me. I'd yell back. I'd walk in the grass when I was supposed to walk on the sidewalk. I'd be in places I wasn't supposed to be, just typical teenage behavior. But one thing I want to share with you and your listeners is the fact that, you know, I called my friend slash victim at the time on the phone, Collect, and she accepted my phone call. And it was during Christmas of 1991, and I was still 14. And one of the things, the first things I said to her is, "Debbie, I'd like to wish you and your family a Merry Christmas and to apologize for shooting you in the face." And then she asked me a question that no 14-year-old should ever have to answer. She said, "Ian, why did you shoot me?" And I just remember saying, it all happened so fast, and it was a mistake. We talked for 15 minutes on that Collect call 30 years ago, and I asked her, could I call back? And I don't remember much from that second phone call, but I do remember asking her, could I write? And she said, yes. And it took, that's how our correspondence started. We became friends through letters, and she forgave me. And it's shining example of restorative justice.
Do you know the answer to that question now of why you shot her?
No, I didn't know the answer to the question then. But I was suffering. I was in pain, and hurt people, you know, and peer pressure. But I didn't intentionally try to kill this lady, and I'm so glad that she didn't die, because I would have had to listen to the lie that is told when family members who are grieving and understandably so say, when I was at Florida State Prison, I used to turn on NPR after every execution and listen to family members say, justice has been served. This is what my mother, sister, brother, aunt would have wanted. But Debbie survived, and she shared with the world what she wanted. She wanted me free. And so that is the difference. Debbie survived. And so I didn't have to listen to her husband, who, you know, was full of pain, say that this is what my wife would have wanted. Debbie survived and said she wanted Ian free. And thank God she did. And I'm forever grateful for our friendship.
So you were eventually, at what point were you moved and with Brian Stevenson that you start to go into an intensive therapy program?
That happened once I was released from prison. You know, I did 26 years in prison. We're kind of jumping ahead at this story, but I went to once I was released and they seen all the trauma that I had went through and had pushed down. Like my lawyer published my poem "Unquiet Tears" in his book, best-selling book, "Just Mercy," and from there, once I was released, he felt like he and everyone, even me, felt like I needed something for the trauma that I had experienced in prison, and they sent me to this prison. This program in Arizona where I went through intensive therapy from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., 7 days a week, 12 hours a day for 3 weeks straight. It was one of the most intense therapy programs I've ever been through, and it was needed because I had been my own therapist for so long by writing my poetry and expressing myself and getting my feelings out on paper. And, if you want to listen to some of the poetry that I wrote, I love to share it with you and your listeners because it's universal poetry that captures my story so significantly.
Please do. I'd love to hear you. Please share a poem with us.
Yeah, I think I'll share the poem, "My Time Will Come." And it's one of the poems that helped motivate me during my circumstances. It says, "I promise you, the brunt of my oppression has a purpose. And this same person that you persecute will one day be worshipped. Though I stand before you bare-chested and shirtless, with my soul and emotions naked, just wanting to be nurtured. Yeah, despite the desperation, desertion, and hurting, my time gonna come. though I composed this poem not knowing if I'll ever be able to perform it in an auditorium, I do it with the faith of a poet that believes he was born to do it, like an acorn caught up in a storm, flung from the branch where it was born. You can only hold me back for so long. My time gonna come. Despite the difficulties and disappointments, my determination remains undaunted. Though the waters of my tomorrows are deep and uncharted, the buoyance of my character will float unwavering towards them, like a song written yet unrecorded. My time gonna come. Though you wrap me in chains and sprayed me with chemical flames and did all of the things you did to add to my pain, my circumstances will change. I believe this with the depth of my being, that as long as this world continues to spin, it cannot end until it's been enjoyed by Ian. Remember this day, because things won't always be this way. My time gonna come. My time gonna come. Against all conceivable odds, my time gonna come. Yeah.
Ian, that is beautiful. I have just a couple questions about it. One is, do you remember how old you were when you wrote that particular poem?
I wrote that poem in 2011 after my resentencing, after I went back to court and the judge took my life sentences back based on the U.S. Supreme Court's decision and resentenced me to 65 years in prison. Despite the U.S. Supreme Court's decision, because state courts are frustrated with federal courts telling them what to do. And so they're trying to get as close to life as possible. So since they can't sentence a juvenile to life anymore, they're giving kids 65 years, 75 years. I've seen even one case where a kid was resentenced to 200 years. So I wrote that poem after that resentencing to show that I wasn't giving up on myself.
26 of your 39 years when you got out, 26 mm-hmm. of the 39 years you spent in prison, which is just insane. So do you feel that your time has come?
I feel my time is coming. This book, My Time Will Come, is a stepping stone to some of the things that I wanted to accomplish in prison. Like, when you're powerless in prison, you dream of power. You dream of being in a position to help people. And I haven't achieved that yet. So I had dreams of a book. I had dreams of making a movie. Both, that's on the way. I had dreams of actually going before Congress and talking to them about solitary confinement and talking to the legislature about changing these laws of kids being with no age limit on the laws to sentence them to prison. So this is a stepping stone, but my time hasn't come yet until more people can enjoy the freedom that I now enjoy.
One of the things that I found, we're just about out of time, but one of the things I found fascinating is that you don't really write poetry anymore.
Yeah, it was utilized as such a survival skill, and I didn't have any distractions in prison. I was able to dive within the depths of my imagination and use it to survive, but it's not a tool that I need to lean on for survival anymore, which is a good thing, but I miss it because it's a superpower, man. Being able to touch people with words the way I was able to do it, I treasure that moment, so I really wish I can get rid of the distractions of everyday life and dive back into my poetry.
Well, it's you certainly do a beautiful job in this book, My Time Will Come, a memoir of crime, punishment, hope, and redemption. Ian Manuel, what a great pleasure to have you on our program. Thank you very much, and best of luck to you.
And thank you for having me.
Be well.
Thank you.
Again, Ian's new book is My Time Will Come. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.